of incidents documented a year before. Mass shootings have been on the rise in the last decade. 273 incidents were reported in 2014. A study published by the Annals of Internal Medicine in February indicates that gun ownership has grown in the United States in recent years, with 7.5 million U.S. adults becoming new gun owners between January 2019 and April 2021. The Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to bear arms, and around a third of U.S. adults say they personally own a gun. However, a poll conducted by Gallup in October 2022 reveals that the majority of Americans are in favor of gun control, with 57% supporting stricter gun laws. The issue, however, remains extremely divisive. According to another Gallup study, Democrats are nearly unanimous in their support for gun control, with less than a quarter of Republicans support stricter regulations. The website of Axios also reported there have now been 501 mass shootings in the United States this year, 2023, a shooting that wounded four people in Denver, Colorado recently, marked the country's 500th mass shooting in 2023, according to Gun Violence Archive. Hours later, that increased to 501 mass shootings after one person died and five others were wounded in El Paso, Texas. Just 5 years ago, the United States had never experienced 500 mass shootings in 1 year. For example, in 2018, 335 mass shootings. In 2019, 414 mass shootings. In 2020, 610 mass shootings. In 2021, 689 mass shootings. In 2022, 645 mass shootings. In the past 2 years, according to the archive, in 2020, it occurred in October. The FBI does not define or quantify what constitutes a mass shooting. Gun Violence Archive, an independent research and data collection organization, defines a mass shooting as a shooting in which four or more people were shot or killed, not including the shooter. This makes its numbers higher than some other sources with varying definitions. A January shooting on the eve of Lunar New Year in Monterey Park, California, a largely Asian American area, has caused the most deaths so far in 2023. 11 people were killed and 9 others injured in the massacre. The most injuries related to gun violence occurred in April at a birthday party shooting in Dadaville that left 4 people dead and 32 others injured. With increasing personal experiences, more Americans view gun violence as a public health concern. 1 in 6 Americans have personally witnessed something being shot, according to survey data from earlier this year. Gun violence has greatly affected children, too. Firearms are the top killer of kids in the United States. Gun deaths among children hit a record high in 2021. Per data released in August, there were 305 school shootings in 2022 and 230 by September 5th in 2023, according to the K-12 school shooting database. Gun deaths among U.S. children hit a new record high. We'll be right back.
شیخ باقر شریف القرشی decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrowshahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was...
When we look at the works of late Rawzati, we see...
There is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarai that he says in Farsi, توحید کلمه برای کلمه توحید.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis on the thoughts and scholarly religious life of the most outstanding companions of Prophet Muhammad and the infallible Imams. And in the new series, we want to talk about the prominent women of Islam, especially the Shiite ones. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, I have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Rouhani and Shaykh Fadai. Shaykh Rouhani, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
And Shaykh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma. Thursday, which is Rabiul Thani 10th, is the demise anniversary, in some accounts, martyrdom anniversary of Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma. So we decided to dedicate this episode of the program, The Teacher, to the outstanding scholarly and religious life of Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma. Shaykh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. Before getting to the details of her life, give us some background about the lineage and the biography of Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma, salamullahi alayha, peace be upon her. I was among the children of Imam Musa al-Kadhim and sister of Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wassalam. But of course, he was one of the best children of the Imam among his daughter and among his sons. After Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wassalam, he was the best daughter of the Imam. He was known as Karima, which means generous. And he was known as, let's say, Ma'asuma, which means innocent or infallible. He was known also as Tahira, which means purified, Hamida, which means praised. And of course, there are lots of nice and beautiful titles and names which is given to this great lady, daughter of Imam Musa al-Kadhim, alayhi salatu wassalam. And his mother was, her mother was Najma Khatun, salamullahi alayha. So, of course, she was born in Medina and lived there in Medina. But later, when Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wassalam asked her to come to Mashhad, to the Tus, I mean, then, of course, she wanted to go from Medina to Khurasan,
yes,
to Marv. In the way to Khurasan, there is a city named Sawa. In that city, she got sick, and then she moved to actually Qum, the city of Qum. Of course, it is said that the people of Qum asked her to come to Qum, and then she came to Qum, and in Qum, actually, she died, and she was buried here in the city of Qum.
That's all right. We will get more to the life account of Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma, the main reasons of her trip to the city of Qom and Iran. In fact, there is long, long way from Medina to Khorasan. So what was the main motive of her, of this outstanding lady? Okay, Sheikh Fadai, is there any account and document, authentic document, showing us the religious knowledge of Lady Fatimatul Ma'asuma? Was she, for example, a kind of a scholarly woman at the time of the infallibles or not?
Yes, you know, we had a lot of children for imams, as we call it, imamzadeh, but just some of them were famous. And the reason for that fame, we can count on two reasons. The first one is their spirituality, which we can call them as a pattern, a spiritual pattern. Yes. Their life, how they worship God, their behavior, and the second one is their knowledge.
Yes.
Now, Lady Masuma was one of the ravis and one of the narrators of the hadith.
Okay.
That she narrated a lot of hadith from his father, from his brother.
Yes.
And we have them in our books of Rivaya. And she was one of the authentic narrator of hadith. And even sometimes imams ask her to answer the questions of people. So people refer to Lady Masuma and they could get their answer in the knowledge about religion. So the reason that we go to her ziyara, to her shrine, is not just that she is one of the daughters of imam. No, her position in knowledge and her position in spirituality made her a special one. And because of that, you can see that in our city, Qom, which is the center of Islamic knowledge,
yes,
the reason is Hazrat Masuma, Lady Masuma.
Yes.
You know,
From that time onward, there was a kind of flourishing of religious centers.
You know,
and
we had a lot of Imamzada, children of Ahlul Bayt in Iran.
Yes.
And we have a lot of shrine.
Yes.
But the only one which made scholars to gather around her was Lady Masuma. So as you can see, now Qom is a city which is the center of Islamic knowledge all around the world.
Yes.
So that is for her position, a special position. And even we have in the records of ulama scholars that whenever they had a problem in their scientific life, they used to refer to this shrine and ask Lady Masuma because, you know, their life and their death is not different. They are alive all the time, even after what we call a death. So they refer to Lady Masuma and ask Your Majesty to solve their scientific problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even from her soul, they ask scientific problem and question, as she was like that in her life. So this is the special position of Lady Masuma.
That's all right. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, is it true that, for example, Imam Musa al-Kazim, the father of Lady Fatimatul Masuma and Imam Reza alayhi salam, referred some people to her in order to get the answer to their religious questions or something like that?
Yeah, it is narrated.
Is this news authentic?
Of course, it is narrated about the Lady Masuma salamullahi alayha, that sometimes the people, when they came to the house of his father, so since his father was imprisoned by Harun al-Rashid, and he was not available. So sometimes, of course, she was able to answer the questions of the people. It is also narrated that Imam al-Kazim once said that Fadaha Abuha.
Yes.
This narration is also narrated by some of the narrators. So, of course, this kind of narrations indicates that how much important and how much scholarly figure was the Lady Masuma salamullahi alayha. The other point that we can mention is that her spiritual position and status in the viewpoints of Imam alayhi salatu wasalam was also very much high and very much important. We have a narration from the Imam alayhi salatu wasalam, Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam, said that Man zara al-masuma fi qum wajaba lahu al-jannah. This kind of narrations we have regarding Lady Masuma salamullah alayha. Which means the one who visit the holy shrine of Lady Masuma salamullah alayha in the city of Qom. So, of course, then he will deserve Jannah, paradise.
This is from
Imam Rida alayhi
salam.
The title or the laqab or the name Masuma is also given from this hadith of Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam. And also there's another hadith from Imam al-Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, Man zara ammati biqum. وجب له الجنة. Again,
whoever visits my aunt,
Lady Masuma salamullahi alayha. And of course, this kind of narrations regarding Lady Masuma salamullah alayha shows that not only her scholarly life, but also her spiritual or ma'anawi kind of position and status was also very much significant and important. As it was rightly mentioned by our brother, that even some of the scholars, the Shia scholars, it happened to them that sometimes they asked their questions from the soul of the Lady Masuma salamullah alayha, and she answered them.
That's right.
The questions. So that's why this lady is a very, let's say, great lady among the Shiite, let's say, figures and personalities in the history, that she gathered lots of scholars for centuries in the city of Qom. And we see that the Shia of Qom, Ash'ariyun of Qom, which was a tribe in Qom, they respected a lot this lady, and they invited this lady to the city of Qom. And the scholars of Qom were there. They respected her, and then that's why she was buried in the holy city of Qom. Also, when she died, it is said that when the people was were preparing themselves to bury the lady, Masuma Sallallahu Alaiha, then suddenly they saw two men with the niqab, with what is
with
that?
With the veil.
Yeah, with the veil.
Yes.
And the people did not see the face of these two figures and these two men. And they came and did the burials of Lady Salamullahi Alayha. Ayatullah Fadil Al-Karani, one of the maraji of Taqlid, he was of the view that these two figures might have been Imam Ridha and Imam Jawad alayhi
salat wa salam. That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
La ilaha illallah. And Sheikh Fadai, as I said, the Islamic Hausa of Qom flourished after the presence of the holy tomb of this lady. We know the other ladies of the descendants of the infallible imams are also buried along with Lady Fatimatul Masuma in the same place. Nowadays, when we take a look at the holy shrine, we could see the tomb of so many great ulama in vicinity of the tomb of Lady Fatimatul Masuma. And you see, this is a good news, and this must be a strange, for example, picture for those who are now talking about the rights of the women, that how many men every day pay visit to the holy shrine of a woman. So a woman, spiritually speaking, when she's grown up, she can be a role model even for men.
Yes. You know, that is the real definition of respect.
Respect, that's
you know,
right.
In Western culture, when they say respect to women or the rights of women, it means that the woman is just some tools for their lives, for their economy, that's it. They call it respect, but it's a big lie. But when we say respect in Islam, we can see the real meaning of respect in Lady Masuma. In science, she is the center of science in Islamic world. In worshiping in Ibadah, she is a center. This is the real respect. And all the time we talk about the high position of this lady, and we respect them not only in her life after thousands of years, even now we are respecting her. Why? Because of the real position of humanity.
Yes.
But what about the women in the West? When they are alive, they're just tools. And when they are dead, they're just ended. That's it. No one mentioned anyone. Can you name any woman in the Western culture which is worshipped by all men, all the scientists, all the scholars after hundreds of years? Of course not. We don't have it. And another point which is interesting about the life of Lady Masuma is the love of Iranian for Ahlul Bayt.
The Persians.
Yes. Yeah. See, when Ahlul Bayt were in Hijaz, or when they were in Iraq, you can see that they were oppressed.
Yes.
Not just by governor, but also by people. Of course, not all of people, but most of the people. You know, there were just a minority of people in Hijaz and Iraq who were real Shia for Ahlul Bayt. But in Iran, just the governors, like Khalifa, Mamun, just the governor were oppressing imams like Imam Reza. And what happened for Lady Masuma, that some of the soldiers of Khalifa went to Lady Masuma in order to stop her, because they knew the position of imam and the position of her sister. They knew that if they two gather together, we cannot continue our power. Because only Imam Reza in the Mev, he could gather a lot of people around him, and they knew that if Lady Masuma arrived in Mev, after that, a lot of ladies will gather around here for his lessons and classes, of course. Yes. And that was a danger for them. Uh-huh. But what about people? People of Iran know always they were in love with Ahlul Bayt. Mm-hmm. And in this event, you can see that people of Qom, they sent their representative to Sava. And of course, they were late because the soldiers of Caliph, they were invaded the caravan of Lady Masuma, and they killed a lot of people in that group. But
One account says that she might be poisoned or martyred or something like that. That's
and this one, we should say, we can say that this record is stronger.
Yes,
that she was shahid, was martyred.
That's right.
It's better to say martyrdom of Lady Masuma. Whether she was poisoned in the way. Or she died because of the sorrow of that killing, that bloodshed. Even if it was by the sorrow of that bloodshed, again, this is a martyrdom. So it's better to say the martyrdom of Lady Masuma.
That's all right. Lady Fatimatul Zahra and Lady Fatimatul Masuma are the only infallible women that have Ziyarat Text Ma'sur, which is, we can say, the senate of this Ziyarat Text is issued by a Ma'sum. This shows the authenticity of the position of Lady Fatimatul Masuma. We know that the holy tomb of Lady Fatimatul Zahra is not known to the Shia. So many people, if they want to talk to Lady Fatimatul Zahra, they refer to Hazrat Masuma in the holy city of Qom. You know, this shows the great position of Lady Fatimatul Masuma in the holy city of Qom. And nowadays, the holy city of Qom, because of the presence of her tomb, is the welcoming city for so many pilgrims all around the world. You know, look how the presence of a holy lady can have effect, for example, on Islamic architecture. The best examples of the Islamic architecture could be found over here, in the Islamic Museum over there, you know, in bridge making and everything.
And there are some Iranian kings in the shrine of Lady Masuma.
They have donated. Different leaders, different rulers, different kings during the history of Islam showed their respect by donating, by spending money on the holy shrine of Lady Fatimatul. So many of them are buried over there, so many ulama are over there. All in all, it is a source of blessing, you know, for the holy city of Qom and the land of Iran. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai and Sheikh Rouhani. We again express our condolences on the demise anniversary of Lady Fatimatul Masuma, which took place on Rabiul Thani 10th, according to the most authentic documents. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program, The Teacher. For more information, visit our website at pastor.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all, Yaman.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The willingness of the U.S. media to partake in the Zionist regime disinformation big lie is not a new thing. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it." This quote was attributed to Joseph Goebbels, the Nazi chief propagandist. Today, Goebbels would envy the Zionist regime's disinformation prowess of employing Western media to willingly market Israeli big lie. Claims of decapitated Israeli children persistently echoed across CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, and other Western media outlets, perpetuating the big lie that eventually became a believable story. The U.S. president even went as far as claiming to have seen non-existing images of decapitated Israeli children. Additionally, Western media propagated other Israeli falsehoods, including allegations of women being raped during the Hamas raid. Curiously, not a single woman came forward to support these claims. In reality, one woman who did speak on Israeli TV described respectful treatment by Hamas resistance fighters. Her accounts, however, went unnoticed by Western media since it contradicted the big lie gambit. NBC and MSNBC joined the big lie when they flaunted a supposed NBC exclusive of a top-secret document, ostensibly detailing Hamas plans to target elementary schools and youth centers. Note the connotation. Elementary schools, implying, of course, targeting children. The Arabic language document was given to NBC by the Zionist regime Army. It is perplexing how NBC missed the glaring inconsistencies in the big lie before disseminating it across all MSNBC news shows. One obvious oversight was that the attack on the post guarding the largest open-air prison occurred when schools were not in session. It was on Saturday. Even if schools weren't on holiday, the attack started at dawn, when schools and youth centers would typically be closed. The exclusive news and the top secret big lie were repeated by all MSNBC news shows and picked up by a carousel of American and European news outlets. This could explain why MSNBC show hosts' personalities, such as Ayman and Mehdi Hassan, the most knowledgeable of the region and who could challenge false information, were absent from their weekend shows and replaced by tabloid news performers. Sadly, American cable news networks abandoned their ethical journalistic responsibility when they became an arm of the Zionist regime Hasbara and an extension to the Zionist regime's Sinim network. It is undeniable Israelis lost their lives as they were caught in the middle of the fight. This is mainly because the Zionist regime uses its population as a human shield by encouraging civilians through tax breaks and other financial incentives to live in areas known as war zones. Furthermore, each of the Zionist-only settlements that came under attack was located next to a known military base, placing them within the immediate combat area. Regarding the music festival, the event was held next to Re'im, Israeli regime military base on the Gaza border. Re'im military camp and its nearby settlement by the same name was another post guarding the siege on Gaza. Following Hamas' successful raid on the fortified military base, the Zionist regime troops abandoned their positions, guns and uniforms, and fled half naked to hide among festival goers and into the nearby Re'im settlement. It's very likely that fighters were not aware of a music event in a war theater, and likewise, it was plausible as they chased Zionist regime troops. They could have reasonably suspected the large gathering of young men and women, as military conscripts and associated their presence with the business of the military base. In other words, they were caught in fire. Like the ones in the nearby settlements who were used as human shields by the fleeing Zionist regime troops. Meanwhile, much have been said and written that the success of Hamas military operation was the result of an Israeli regime intelligence failure. Media security pundits, however, failed to connect the raid within the broader context of the Palestine conflict, not only when an Israeli is killed. Hamas' success was not solely an Israeli regime intelligence failure, as suggested by the media pundits. Rather, it can be attributed to the long-standing suffering of 2.3 million people in Gaza, who for 18 years yearned for the day they could break free from their confinement. This determination and ingenuity took the world by surprise, even baffling the best military planners. Another factor is the Zionist regime arrogance. Empowered by international impunity, Benjamin Netanyahu belongs to the Zionist school of thought, believing that the more Palestinians are suppressed, the less there is need to talk about peace. Despite some of the obvious signs, the prime minister didn't believe that the people, who he came to believe are less than his chosen race, would be capable of breaking the jail and overcoming the jailer's posts. Having stated that the Zionist regime officials are united in dehumanizing the Palestinians to justify their inhumanity, throughout human history, dehumanization was always a prerequisite to carrying out genocidal wars and oppression. We saw that during slavery, stealing the land of Aboriginals. In this case, and to prepare for the onslaught on Gaza, the Zionist regime war minister announced several inhumane punitive measures against the Palestinians, such as cutting off water, food, and fuel. To justify the Zionist regime's savagery, he declared, "We are fighting human animals and we act accordingly." Alas, it's very unlikely the international community would have tolerated the slaughtering of animals, as they have allowed the Zionist regime to blow Palestinian children to smithereens. Meanwhile, the so-called moderate Zionist regime president dismissed a question from a journalist regarding the death of civilians in Gaza, where he suggested that civilians in Gaza are legitimate military targets, saying, "It is an entire nation out there that is responsible."
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Gaza is in its third week, and Israel has been hinting at a ground operation for several days. Israeli forces, backed by heavy deployment of U.S. warships in the region, have taken positions close to the besieged Strip's frontiers, while at the same time warplanes continue to indiscriminately pound Gaza. The regime, however, keeps delaying the ground invasion, citing the need to enhance the readiness of its forces and the issue of the captives. However, informed sources have told Press TV that Israeli forces have actually tried a ground offensive, and that twice. The first try happened on Sunday afternoon, as an Israeli brigade was ambushed by Palestinian resistance forces when trying to enter Gaza's Rafah border. Two bulldozers and a tank belonging to the regime were hit, and some 10 tanks were left as the Israeli soldiers fled for their lives. The second failed ground invasion, Press TV source said, happened hours later on Sunday night. This time, more than 20 Israeli tanks were repelled on the way to Khan Yunis. The regime's military later reported that one soldier was killed and three were injured by an anti-tank missile shot by Hamas during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of Hamas, announced later on its Telegram account that it had pushed Israeli forces back into the occupied territories. The next day, Tel Aviv announced that it had decided to delay the ground war in Gaza, pending the arrival of additional American forces in the region. Meanwhile, Hamas and other Palestinian resistance factions have expressed full readiness for any battle on the ground, warning that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders in the event of a ground offensive.
I think this is part of their plan. We are expecting this to happen. But what we hear from the people, from the military wing, that we believe that if they try to enter Gaza again, it will be the what we call it the maqbara. They will be not only defeated, but they will be buried here in Gaza Strip.
Following the October 7 surprise operation by Hamas, the delusion of Israel's invincible military and intelligence power was shattered. The Al-Aqsa flood operation demonstrated that Hamas and other resistance groups are totally capable of performing offensive operations. On the other hand, resistance movements across the region have warned that in the event of U.S. intervention, all American outposts in West Asia will turn into legitimate targets. The question remains whether Washington is ready to take this dangerous risk or not.
Israel's war in Gaza may have brought devastation to the Strip, accompanied by the massacre of civilians, mostly women and children. But Israel's knee-jerk reaction to its complete intel and military failure at the hands of Hamas and resistance fighters may have another casualty, Israel itself. Prior to the war, Israel was not on solid footing. It faced many threats on a variety of fronts, most notably the judicial reforms. 8 months of protests against the Prime Minister Netanyahu and its extreme cabinet members had turned many inside Israel against Netanyahu. Israel's staunchest ally, the U.S., had expressed grave concerns about the push for the judicial reforms, with the U.S. President Joe Biden stating publicly that Netanyahu should not go for it. But Netanyahu did not, or could not, back out. Meanwhile, former Israeli politicians, like the former Prime Minister Ehud Barak, have expressed grave concern about Israel's survival altogether, saying the entity will cease to exist before the 80th anniversary of its 1948 establishment. He said Jews had not ruled for more than 80 years throughout history, predicting a doom and gloom scenario for Israel. This gloom and doom scenario was unfolding in Israel. Take the economy. Since the protests broke out 8 months ago, Israel's economy was heading down a downward spiral. This included lower GDP growth, a decrease in investment, especially in the tech sector, and both capital and Israeli flight. Israeli far-right ministers like Ben-Gvir and Smotrich promoted a crackdown on Palestinians. This included near-daily raids, resulting in deaths, injuries, detainments. The death toll had reached over 250, a record number. This is while Itamar Ben-Gvir was pushing the envelope when it came to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. In his long-term goal to Judaize the mosque, the number of raids inside the mosque accompanied by settlers and regime security forces were increasing. Hamas and the resistance groups issued warning after warning about the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, that the time would come when it would retaliate, but that had fallen on deaf ears. Until October 7th, when Operation Al-Aqsa Flood was executed. Defense One News, close to the U.S. military, had this to say about the Hamas and resistance fighters. They have absolutely exquisite intelligence on the location of Israeli secret bases and their communications capabilities. They knew exactly where to go, knew where the critical communications nodes were, that they were able to destroy with drones and other kinetic strikes to try to impede the response. And that they did, and even more. Israel was caught off guard, flat-footed, and within a blink of an eye, its invincibility shattered. Dropping U.S. bombs on innocent Palestinian civilians would not solve Israel's problems. It actually made it worse. And this carnage, which included deaths on a massive scale, mostly women and children, engulfed the entire world, which came out in protest against the Israeli regime. And like a house of cards, it brought the rest of its supporters down with it, which included resignations of high-ranking officials. The U.S. image was now tainted, associated once again as an accomplice to the one committing war crimes like it did in Yemen. The State Department official, Josh Paul, resigned over the Biden administration's militaristic approach to the conflict. He said he could not support sending over arms, which he believed to be short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse to. U.S. politicians, mainly Democrats, were also voicing their anger at Israel and U.S. military assistance. Spain's acting Minister of Social Rights, Velarra, called for economic sanctions against Israel and the suspension of diplomatic relations, one of many government officials around the world who are rethinking their relations with Israel. Many Israelis are blaming Netanyahu for the downfall of Israel and have demonstrated against them, demanding his resignation. Settlements emptied along the Gaza border, an incapable army, an economy tanking, a war that has lost already, especially when it comes to world opinion, and the occupied territories now filled with hate between armed settlers and Palestinians, ready to blow up. Israel is facing an existential threat that may deal the final blow. They have tried to suppress the voice of the Palestinians. Common catchphrases, all-out support for Israel, unwavering support, and the likes. But finally, the world is not buying it. No amount of media coverage can cover up the Israeli crimes, including America's all-out support.
And we stand with the Palestinians, and we stand with Arabs. And they try and change the narrative because you own the narrative, see? This is our problem. You own the narrative. You own the United Nations. You own Hollywood. You own all these mouthpieces. Where are our voices? Our voices need to be heard as well. We've been watching your channel. And instead of mourning our dead, instead of mourning these Palestinian children, we've been having to deal with more dehumanization of Arabs.
And the proof that the tide is turning are in the worldwide protests.
Here just to show the support for our people in Gaza.
What we're experiencing today, it's happening in Palestine, is a genocide.
I'm here because I'm a Jew born in Jerusalem, and I'm horrified and enraged that my government here in the U.S. is sending weapons and money and never-ending, unconditional diplomatic support for Israel.
The world rallying behind Palestinians and Palestine. And it's not because Israel is murdering Palestinians, mostly women and children. Just think about it. How can this war bring out so many people from all corners of the world in such high numbers? It's because the world has been educated. It's informed now. It has witnessed four wars before, and it has seen the daily oppression and killing of Palestinians under an apartheid regime. Now U.S. politicians are speaking in a way that they haven't before.
Congresswoman representing the Massachusetts 7th Congressional District.
Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong? But you watch as bodies pile up, as neighborhoods are leveled. Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care?
The passion in her voice from an American politician is for life and how it's being snuffed out, taken away with a missile, ones that are made in the USA. Since the war started, 45 cargo planes transported weapons from the U.S. to Israel. Among the military aid, around 1,000 tons of armaments, including 155-millimeter artillery shells, military vehicles, and supplies.
To President Biden and his administration, generations will not forget, and history will be recorded, that it was your administration, your billions of dollars, your support with weapons of mass destruction.
A veteran U.S. State Department official quit over what he described as the Biden administration's intellectual bankruptcy, in which he said Biden is rushing to provide arms to Israel, which is short-sighted, destructive, unjust, and contradictory to the very values that we publicly espouse. A CBS poll asked whether the U.S. should send weapons to Israel. More than half the respondents said that it should not. That is another first. And while we are on first-time occurrences, this is a first, which occurred at the Human Rights Council session in Geneva. The council members turned their back to the American ambassador's speech in Geneva. This happened during her speech preaching about human rights, while America's all-out support and bombs were killing Palestinians as she was speaking. The true face of the Israeli regime and the U.S. backing has rocked the U.S. status quo when it comes to Israel. Widespread attempts to suppress pro-Palestinian voices have reached unprecedented levels in the U.S. The cancellation of major conferences, demands for the dismissal of workers who express support for Palestinians, and intimidation campaigns against Arab-American voices critical of Israeli policies are just some examples. This has even affected U.S. lawmakers, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, once a U.S. presidential candidate, in which more than 260 of her staffers signed an open letter demanding that she call for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, describing Israel as increasingly fascist, that commits war crimes and enforces a brutal apartheid, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But only certain U.S. lawmakers have the guts to openly support Palestine.
You know what's so hard sometimes is watching those videos and the people telling the kids don't cry and like let them cry. And they're shaking, and some of you know this, they keep telling them not to cry in Arabic. They can cry, I can cry, we all can cry. If we're not crying, something is wrong. And so I'm telling you right now, President Biden, not all America's with you on this one.
Previous Israeli crimes are no secret. Kana, 1996. Israel bombed a UN shelter, killing 106 civilians, mostly kids. Israel was never held accountable. Lebanon, 1982. The Sabra and Shatila massacre resulted in the killings of between 2,000 and 3,500 Palestinian refugees and Lebanese civilians in 2 days in the city of Beirut. Previous massacres of Palestinians by Israel have been etched in people's minds, especially the wars on the Gaza Strip, which is why the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction, requires a reboot, one to include Israeli officials, including the pilots who dropped the bombs, on the Palestinians. After all, now is the time that sanctioning Israeli products could prove successful, since Israel's economy is tanking due to the war. We mentioned a couple of first-time incidents before. Here's another. Thousands of Muslims praying in front of the U.S. Congress to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. A scene that creates a sense of deja vu. For this is reminiscent of how Palestinians have prayed in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in their future capital.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. This meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseini on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. There is a point that I would like to bring to the attention of the armed forces that I believe is very important. And that point is that the logic of the power in Islam is not the logic of supremacy. In materialistic systems, what is meant by power is supremacy. Supremacy means lording over others, considering yourself to be superior to others, imposing yourself on others, putting your problems on others' people's shoulders, and humiliating others. This is the definition of power in materialistic systems. The one who gains power gains supremacy as well. One of the negative concepts in the Holy Quran is this issue of supremacy. As we read in the Holy Quran, Surah 28, Ayah 4, "Indeed, Pharaoh tyrannized over the land." This is supremacy. The logic of power in Islam is not the logic of supremacy. In other words, the more your power increases and the more your capabilities increase, either your inherent capabilities or your legal capabilities, the more humble, flexible, and attentive to Allah you need to be.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Most of you have probably heard the story about Malik al-Ashtar. Malik al-Ashtar was a brave, strong commander in Imam Ali's army. He was a strong arm for the commander of the faithful. This is who Malik al-Ashtar was. He was walking in Kufa. This story apparently took place in Kufa when a young boy who didn't recognize him saw him and started to ridicule him. Maybe his clothes or his turban were in a way that seemed funny to the boy. The boy ridiculed him and laughed. Malik Al-Ashtar didn't say anything and left. After he had passed by and left, someone asked the boy if he knew who he had just ridiculed. The boy said no. He told the boy that was Malik Al-Ashtar. The boy became frightened and said, "Now that I have treated Malik Al-Ashtar in such a way, what will he do to me or my family? What should I do?" The man said, "Go apologize to him." The boy went looking for him and find him and to apologize. He saw Malik Al-Ashtar go into the mosque and become busy with praying. The boy waited for his prayer to finish. Then the boy went up to him and said, "Sir, I am sorry. I didn't recognize you. I was rude to you. Please forgive me." Malik Al-Ashtar said, "I came to this mosque and performed 2 rak'ah prayers to pray for you." After all, a young person who acts in such a rude way requires prayers, and we should pray for him. He said, "I came here to pray for you."
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Palestinians mourned the death of Omar Daraghmi, a senior Hamas member who had recently been arrested in the occupied West Bank, while Israeli prison authorities insist that his Monday death was a normal death. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank insist that Israel's intensified crackdown on prisoners led to the murder of Daraghmi. Here, outside the building of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Ramallah, Palestinians gathered to mourn the death of Daraghmi. The Commission of Prisoners Affairs told Press TV that, according to Daraghmi's lawyer, hours before his death, Daraghmi had appeared before a court hearing and seemed to be in good health.
Martyr Omar Daraghmi was murdered due to attacks he suffered, because only hours earlier he was in good condition. The lawyer of Omar Daraghmi said he spoke to him via video conference and was told he was doing fine. A few hours later, he was declared dead. We know the prisoners reject to be taken to court hearings under the current situation because they are being beaten and assaulted following the hearing. We believe this happened with Omar. He faced a brutal assault leading to his martyrdom.
Hamas movement has also accused Israel of killing Daraghmi, one of its senior leaders in the occupied West Bank. In a press release, the movement held Israel responsible for his death, describing it as an assassination. An Israeli statement claimed his death was due to a heart attack. He was arrested on October 9 and placed under administrative detention. Since October 7, overnight arrest rates into Palestinian cities have escalated. Prisoner advocacy groups say Israeli forces have arrested over 1,300 Palestinians since October 7. They say these prisoners suffer from severe mistreatment and are in dire conditions.
It's part of the war being carried out against our people in the West Bank.